Okay, we're continuing our dating series, and where we basically got up to last time is the second date. We discussed how the beginning of the dating is more about understanding where we're coming from, our priorities, our philosophies, our beliefs. We discussed the importance for a chozer b'tshuva not to be quick to share his meaningful spiritual experiences, which might not resonate so quickly with someone else. And even though a person feels it deeply, that doesn't mean the other side is prepared to hear it so fast. And now we continue. So we hit the second date, and here we'll start discussing general points with regard to dating. Number one is the person shouldn't be quick to react. Sometimes you hear something and you feel like splurting out everything, you're just swallowing as the other party says it, and you have to take it without batting an eyelash and just listen for a minute. It might not be what you think it is. I was dating a girl. She spent the first 35 minutes of a date, now just picture this. We come to the date. I'm a guy from Merkaz Harav. All my friends are continuing learning, and I'm sitting on the date, and she spends the first 35 minutes, everything we discuss in the conversation comes back to this idea that she doesn't understand why girls would ever marry a guy who's learning Torah, and why the educators tell them to do that. And I'm listening politely, and I'm trying to understand what am I missing here. After about 35 minutes, I found the right interval, and I said, you know, I was just wondering. I hear your points, and I respect what you've said. I'm just wondering, you know, the direction I'm headed in is to continue learning Torah. And she looks at me and says, yeah, like there's no question here. And I'm thinking, well, so after a few minutes, I get the courage and I say again, you know, listening to everything you've said, I don't exactly understand, because you said you understand that this is the direction I'm headed in, and then we're continuing to date, but yet you speak about how you don't understand all these girls that marry someone who's learning and the educators that guide them that way. So she said, yeah, right, but I didn't talk about me. I'm interested in it, but I don't understand all these girls who don't think about it and don't realize what they're getting themselves into, and the educators who educate the girls to it and don't share with them what they're getting themselves into. I think I do understand what I'm getting myself into, and I'm interested. Okay, but I could have walked away after the first 45 minutes, hour of the date, and just said, okay, I don't know what anyone was thinking here. We dated until she broke up. I never called it off. I didn't have to agree with what she said, but the perspective I got was not really what she meant to give. And this means have patience and listen and ask, and let the conversation flow. And you see, we don't have to be quick to judge, and sometimes things are not a pivotal part of the other person's belief system, and they are a pivotal part of ours, or vice versa. I have a friend whose wife was so dedicated to their goal together, she would stand outside and sell popsicle sticks. She would do everything she could in order to help them move forward in their goal in life. But when they were dating, she spoke very strongly about other ways of life. And the reason was because it was very important to her to defend her siblings who had a different way of life. So sometimes a person can have a sibling or a parent who is not religious. And then you start talking in conversation, and the person starts saying, you know, people who aren't religious could be fine people and caring people, and they're nice people, and they could go on and on about it, and you could ask yourself, wait a second, where is she or he headed? And the answer is nowhere. All they're saying is they want you to be able to appreciate that there are good people even though they're not religious, just as an example. And that's why it's important to let the other person speak, to listen, and to ask. If I didn't understand, so let me ask. Let's hear what the other person's really saying. We all walk into dating with our own, in Hebrew they call them scratches, where every person has their sensitivities. Sritot, that's in Hebrew. Sritot is like what we would call in English our quirks. Every person has their sensitivities and those points where you better not touch them. I often tell the story about the girl that we were sitting on the date, And on the date, I said, you know, we're all spoiled. You know, you're spoiled. And before I could say another word, she went on and on for about 5-10 minutes telling me what a worthless piece of dirt I was. Now, all I meant to say is, you know, we have running water, we have electric in our houses, our grandparents had to cut wood. I wasn't coming and saying she's a spoiled person. But when she heard that, that's it, boom, and I didn't know what happened. I didn't know what I did to bring on this explosion. So I'm sitting there listening, and you could imagine if she had what to say, we'd been dating for a little bit. And she's going on and on, and I'm listening. Okay, I didn't know what caused it. And after about 5 or 10 minutes, she goes up for air, and I'm just wondering. Like, I said, you know, I'm not contesting what you said. I'm just trying to understand what made you say all that now. So she looks at me and says, "What do you mean? You don't think it's hurtful to tell a person they're spoiled? You think that's a nice way to talk to a person?" And I burst out laughing, because I took me a minute to even register, so much time had passed. And I said, you know, I wasn't talking about you as opposed to me. I was talking about our generation. I didn't mean it that way.
What did she say?
Silence. You know, after you say a mouthful, what are you going to say now? There was no apology. if that's what you're asking. But at any rate, fine. I'm just saying, we do walk into the dating scene with our sensitivities. And sometimes we have to take care and ask ourselves, is it what they said or is it what I heard? Is it what I was scared of hearing? As we date, one of the major things we're looking for is chemistry. Sometimes you have to know what's important, what's not important, but sometimes you have to know what's forced. Meaning sometimes the relationship doesn't work and it's just not taking off. There's no real chemistry there. And I'm not saying it's impossible for it to work in such circumstances, but most often it's supposed to be smooth. I always quote my aunt. She told my brother when he was dating, she said to him, there are all kinds of shoes in life. There are shoes you wear when you're going out to an affair, your high heels. There are shoes you wear when you go jogging. There are shoes you wear when you go climbing. All kinds of shoes in life. You have sneakers when you go running, and then you have your tennis shoes. But then what you have when you come home are your slippers. And those are that's what you put on when you just want to feel comfortable. You don't have to show anything. You don't have to accomplish anything. You could just be yourself. And marriage is not the tennis shoes or the running shoes or the hiking shoes or the classy shoes. Marriage is the slippers. You want to come home and feel at ease. And that's not going to happen on the first date. Shouldn't happen on the first date. Even though the rapport might be smooth, it takes time for people to feel comfortable with one another. But over time, what we're looking for is that we can have normal conversation with one another. Conversation. Now, within that conversation, we're looking to understand who the other person is. So we discussed in the past that we're not working off of a checklist. You know, does she believe in one God? Check. Does she believe in Judaism? Check. Is she a nice person? Check. No, that's not how it's going to work. But there are points, and that was the part of the purpose of the questionnaire I left last week. There are points which you want to make sure you're compatible on. You want to make sure you see eye to eye. So let's take some of those points which should be on your list. Mutual respect. People sometimes feel very comfortable entering a relationship where they make jokes at one another's expense. And it might be funny, it might be comfortable, it might be the humor a person is used to. For most people, that's not a healthy relationship. For most people, it's not good to be in a relationship where they're constantly making sarcastic comments or jokes at one another's expense. We want a relationship where we do not feel challenged, where we can be comfortable being ourselves. So that's point number one, mutual respect. Point number two, you want to enjoy the other person. So that means different things for different people. A boy and a girl are not going to have the same relationship as two boys or two girls. It's different. But you do want to enjoy being with the other person. One of the formulas we say when it comes to choosing the right person is, do you look forward to the dates? Do you enjoy the time you spend with the person? Do you tell yourself at the end of the date, I don't want the date to end, I wish I could continue being with this person? Meaning, that's very encompassing. It's not one thing, it's a lot of things. Now, sometimes there are small things which are surmountable, and sometimes there are small things which are not surmountable. I remember there were girls I dated that our conversational styles did not match. We'd constantly be pausing and waiting for the other person. I don't know if you guys know what I mean. Sometimes you have a conversation where each side is just waiting. You were saying something. No, you were saying something. And you could do that once, you could do that twice, but when the conversation keeps going that way, okay, so I think that's something that should be surmountable. I'd be surprised if that's something which should be beyond repair. I think that if everything else works, then over time people learn to talk to one another. And there are many things that way, and that's why it is important to consult with someone who has a little bit more experience, because sometimes things seem far out to us. If a girl speaks very slowly, then sometimes you get the feeling that she is not so intelligent, but she might be a genius. Now, that doesn't mean you'll have patience for her, but if you put your finger on it, then you have to think about it. You have to think about it, and sometimes you could talk, and sometimes during the course of the dating, you learn to appreciate and you stop noticing certain things. You don't always have to decide right away. You'd be surprised how much you could get used to. Now, if you tell me I'm falling asleep every date, okay, so that's a problem, right? We're not getting off the ground, and I'm not sure she could do anything about it. And that brings us to the next point. Sometimes people think they can make the slightest comment to the other person. In our marriage class, we discussed that a girl has to be approached like someone with a hearing aid turned to the highest volume, who doesn't even need the hearing aid. So when you whisper, they hear a yell. And if you're going to make the slightest comment to the girl, you have to be aware that there's a very strong possibility that she's going to take very, very, very personally. And as much as people think that, no, I was nice and I was caring, you guys don't know how many times I've been in the picture, and the guy asked me afterwards, what do you think? And I said, look, I think there's A or B that you guys don't match on, and I don't see it changing. And the guy went like an elephant through a China store, and went there and said, you know, A or B are points that you really should think about changing. And the girl, being as gentle as she was, actually tried working on it. But when they broke up, and usually they broke up over those points, so then I would call up the girl to apologize on behalf of the guy. Guys don't even know it, that I've done this on their behalf. But sometimes I'd call up the girl and I'd say, look, I assume that you were pretty hurt by some of the things the guy says. And the girl always goes, oh, you bet, you bet. And then I'll call the guy and he'll say, I wasn't hurtful, I was just mentioning. It doesn't work that way. Just mentioning, girls shouldn't just mention to guys and guys shouldn't just mention to girls. This is who you're dating, and there are very few points where you can really say, you know, we don't exactly match on this, and what do you think? And really expect the girl to shift in your direction. Meaning, there are points you can discuss, but if the girl showing up to the date with a neckline that's cut down to here didn't start on this date, what are you going to tell her? So she's going to start wearing a scarf. Very good. What do you expect? She's going to change her whole wardrobe? No. This is who you're dating. Will she change one day? Maybe. Guys date girls who say, you know, I'm not prepared to cover my hair. So, fine. This is a very common thing. A chozer b'tshuva and a chozer b'tshuva. So that's a whole parsha in and of itself, which we'll get to in a minute. But many times a girl says, I'm not prepared to do that. So now what are you going to do? Tell her, think about it again. My wife, we had a year where every week another guy was dating a girl, but the girl said this. So my wife came up with a good allegory for the guys to understand what was going on. My wife said to one of the guys, imagine you're dating a girl and she tells you, after we get married, I want you to walk around with pink pants. Pink pants and pink polka dots on the pants. From now, it's just after marriage. It's just a religious thing, you know. So all your friends don't do it. You'll start doing it. What would you say? You'd say, gee, I'm not so sure. It feels a little weird to me. It doesn't feel natural. So in the tshuva process, it happens to be that for many girls, the idea of covering their hair is last on the list. It's not so easy for them to connect with that. All their friends don't do it. She loves her hair. The girl, her hair is what she's been growing up with. It's a huge part of being feminine. And now you're going to tell her to cover it or wear a wig. It's like telling a guy, wear pink pants from now on. So there's no room to judge a girl. There's room to discuss. There's room to see where she's holding on it. And you have to respect who she is. This is who she is. There are points where after discussion, people move, people shift. There are many girls who enter dating thinking they're going to marry a guy who learns 5 minutes a day or 10 minutes a day and end up marrying a guy who spends his whole day learning. And through the dating process, they realize this was what they wanted. There was a girl who in Lakewood whose father always tried to set her up with guys who were learning, and she always said no. Finally, one guy took her out on the first date to a baseball game, and she went head over heels for this guy, and he's one of the most serious learners in Lakewood till today. And she went all out for him, because for him, she was willing to do it. Sometimes the chemistry moves the person, and the person says, for that guy, I'm willing to go all out. But we're trying to see that we match. And on most points, people, if the guy tells me, true story, I'm going to serve in the army till I retire. And the girl tells me, I don't see a point in Zionism, I'm not sure I want to move to Israel. So then you ask yourself, how does this work? So you could talk about it, and at the end of the day, if this is who she is, sometimes a girl says, I want to think about it, and it's legitimate. Very often I'll tell a guy or a girl, why don't you go and consult with your rabbein? But then we come to the next point, which is a question of how much can a person really evolve in a day or in a week or in a month? Meaning, the question is how pivotal are certain points to a person's life, and how much can a person really evolve and be truthful about it? Meaning, if it's within a person's value system, but a person says, you know, I'm not yet sure I'm willing to commit to that, that's one thing. If a person says, I don't believe in that, and then after dating you, she says, actually, I do believe in it. I used to think there were three gods. Now I accept there's one. So are you sure you want to marry a person like that? Give her, like I've said many times to guys, give the girl a half a year in Midrashah and then see if you guys match. If she's only now starting to keep kosher, if she's only now starting to observe certain laws in the Torah, give her time to settle. Just like you have to date out of equilibrium, she has to date out of equilibrium. But this is a tricky thing, because there are points where a person can shift. A person can shift within a certain realm, and it's truthful. But that's very hard to gauge where that realm ends, when it starts being beyond what you could really bank on. So if they are pivotal points where we find ourselves differing, even if the other side is willing to come meet us at a common ground, it pays to consult. It pays to really think about whether we're on the same page, whether it's possible for us to be on the same page. A guy was dating a girl. She said she doesn't take kashrut seriously. But she said, you know what? If we get married, I'll take kashrut seriously. So I asked her, will you take kashrut seriously for him or because you believe in it? So she said, for him. So I said, and what happens when you have a fight? Then it's going to become, I'm not doing your fleishik dishes separate from your milchik dishes, because it's your fleishik and your milchik, because I don't believe in it. I've been doing you a favor until now. You want to do it, you do it. I'm not doing it. No, that's not the way it would play itself out. Really? So that's where we have to really analyze if we're not on the same page during the dating. And the other side says, well, I could respect that. I'm willing to go with it. Very often it's not a good idea to continue the dating. Very often there are too many points where we don't see eye to eye in our belief system, in our aspirations. And this is what you're exploring as you date. So how do you explore this? The best way is through stories. Try to bring in stories that illustrate points, and through the stories, you try to pose the story so that you could hear what the other person holds. So let's take an example. Any example you guys want? Okay, so about kashrut. Let's say you want to understand if kashrut is important to her. So you say to her, look, I have friends who went up to the north, they were going on vacation, and they showed up at this restaurant, they were all hungry during the trip, and there was a kashrut on the place that they didn't recognize. So it seemed like a nice certificate and everything. Or you don't even have to go up north. Go to Agrippa's. You'll see nice certificates that you don't know who they are. No one knows who they are. But they're a nice certificate on many of the restaurants in Agrippa's and in the Jewish quarter too. So you see these nice certificates that say Badatz, and they started wondering, should we eat here or not? Now on the one hand, you don't want to be one of those fanatics who only eats who knows which Badatz. On the other hand, you want to eat something that's reliable. Where do you draw the line? So I was wondering, what do you think? You notice how you gave both sides legitimacy, and now the ball's in her hands. She doesn't even know what you want to hear. And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer. As we discussed, dating is about who am I, who is she, and do we match? It's not about who's right. It's about, are we compatible? So you have to think of examples. There's one area when it comes to chinuch, to educating our children, that girls are hypersensitive about, and that's about hitting kids. Most girls, if you are of those that believe that there are times when the right thing is to hit a child, be prepared that girls on dates get very, very scared when you mention that. They're going to start asking you, and when do you start hitting the wife? I got that question. You're laughing. I got that more than once. And you have to be very careful. Don't ruin your names. Don't make jokes about this. You answer very clearly. You know, it's never appropriate. It's never right. And it's not even right to joke about it. Which is what I believe, by the way, that you shouldn't joke about it either. There's no room for that. I think education is something you have to discuss. You do not have to come up with a decision of which school you're going to send your kids to, but you do have to discuss the methods and the goals of education. And that's a conversation which comes very easily if you go to parks. That's one of the reasons I like going to parks on dates. You get to see families, you get to see educational scenarios, and you get to discuss what's right, what's wrong, what reaction should be there, what are parents' jobs. And maybe this is something you guys haven't thought a lot about. You have to think about it. What's your role as a parent? That was the question on the questionnaire. Very often we speak about our role as a spouse. Well, I don't think it should be on the first date, but somewhere around the third. It's not terrible if it's a second, third. First date, you're still discovering who one another is. Who's she? Who's her family? Where is she coming from? What does she believe in? As the dates evolve, you approach to questions like that. People sometimes say, when we're married, how do you imagine our Shabbos table looking? So girls don't like that. Don't talk to me as though I'm going to be married to you. Meaning, you put her in a tight spot. You could discuss, how do you imagine in your home the Shabbos table will look? Do not begin the conversation when we are married. She doesn't want to hear that. There's a joke that they say that a guy asks the girl, how do you imagine your Shabbos table looking? And she says, without you. So you also have to be specific. What are you asking? One question which was an interesting question I was asked when I was dating is, how do you imagine helping clear the table, set the table? Should the husband be clearing the table, setting the table? Should the wife? And I think that's also a question which you could set up nicely. You know, the husband's after a long work week, the wife's after a long work week, everyone's tired, the wife worked hard to prepare the food. Who should be the ones taking the food out to the table? Now, if you ask me what the correct answer is, I think the correct answer is that the wife should be bringing the food to the table. Your job as a husband is to run the Shabbos table, to be talking to the kids Divrei Torah. You should send the kids to help her. You should ensure that she has what help she needs. When you're newly married and there's no one at the table but you when she goes into the kitchen, there's nothing wrong. Go out there and help her bring the food to the table. And there's nothing wrong if she's sitting at the table and you set the table. But once the kids are old enough that they need a Shabbos table with Abba, so that's indispensable, what you can give them during that time. And assuming she has the strength for it, then I would expect, and that's the way our Shabbos table runs, that she brings the food to the table and you send in the kids to help her, and that then the kids see that they get to talk to you Divrei Torah, they get to sing with you, they get sent by you, so they see how important it is to you that they help. As you're sitting there, I try to make a point every Shabbos of mentioning to the kids how hard their mother worked, buying the food, cleaning the food, cooking the food, setting the table. And at the end of the meal, they all know that I send my wife to sleep, and I clear the table, and they clear the table, and I do the dishes, and then they get that message, the importance of helping, and appreciation for how hard their mother worked. But that's the balance I think is right. To each his own. You could do whatever you want. But it does give you a lot of insight if you talk to the girl and she says, why do you think I should be doing the shopping? You should be doing the shopping. Why do you think I should be doing the cooking? Many husbands have the husbands doing the cooking. I don't care. You could do the cooking. You know, I'm saying there's no right and wrong in this as far as the division of tasks. If she's working in high tech and she's funding everything at home, and you have many hours off and you could do the shopping and the cooking, why not? And even if not, there were many years that I did the shopping whenever I could. I think the approach has to be that we help one another as we can. We don't work with the system. This is my job, this is your job, don't ask me to do that. When we can, we help one another. So when possible, the husband does the shopping. When possible, the wife does the shopping. We're each working hard. The division of tasks is something that Chozrim B'Tshuva very often have a hard time with. Like, what am I supposed to do? So it's very hard in a class to cover that. A lot of it depends on where you and she are coming from, but it's a fair topic to discuss when you're dating. It's fair to understand where she's coming from. And if you have questions, we could discuss it, but I don't think there's a one right or wrong. You know, different couples divide things differently. Rav Shaul Yisraeli, he was Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav, he insisted on washing the house for Shabbos every Shabbos. He wouldn't let the grandchildren do it, he wouldn't let his wife do it. He insisted, that was his job. He cleaned the house for Shabbos. I don't know why, I would let my kids wash the floor for Shabbos. I don't fight my wife to be the one to wash the floor. I help where I can, and where I can't, I don't. But in his house, that's what he did. Rav Brandsdorfer, I told you guys when we passed his house, from the Badatz Eda Haredis, Payas, Mashar, Black Hats, you'd knock on his door, you'd see him with an apron. He said, when I'm home, I'm helping. If I'm home, that's what I'm doing. If I'm out in yeshiva, I'm teaching, I'm learning. When I'm home, I'm helping. So from the minute he got home, anytime you'd knock with a shayla, you had a question to ask, he was there with his apron, come to the door, his pay is an apron. Rav Halberstam Zatzal, same thing, told me that he used to grab his long white beard and say to me, you see this beard? This beard did the shopping, the cooking, the cleaning. There's nothing wrong with that. We're partners and we work with one another. But as you're dating, it's a good idea to see where she's coming from. I know couples where the wife says, I'm after a long day's work and I have to rest, and she shows up at home at 5 o'clock and makes herself a hot bath and sits in it waiting for her husband to come home and deal with the kids and put them to sleep and cook tomorrow's lunch and clean up the dishes, and the poor husband works till about 1 o'clock every morning. And his wife is in the bath from 5 o'clock till 7, and then she has to nap till about 9, and she gets up and eats the supper that he prepared. This would be humorous if it wasn't true, but I know the couple. But you know what? People have perspective. They wanted me to counsel them, and I felt like I couldn't do anything, because if that's her perspective, I didn't see how you pull a person out of that perspective. You know, she was upset that her supper wasn't ready and hot at 9 o'clock when she woke up from her nap. I didn't know how you explain to someone that he's working very hard. You know, he comes home from a full day's work to deal with the kids in bedtime and do the cooking and do the cleaning and have your supper ready for you after your bath and your nap. I didn't know how to explain that. But you know what? You want to hear what the girl's perspective is. So it's worth discussing this. It's worth it at some point during the dating to discuss the division of tasks, the division of roles. But you better know a little bit what direction and how you quantify how you see the division of tasks. Any questions still here?
Do you have a counselor?
Nope.
Let's talk about her perspective, right?
It's very hard. I was scared I wouldn't succeed, and I don't believe that you have too many chances. You can't send people from counselor to counselor to counselor. So once I got an understanding of what was going on, I didn't see that there was a better chance that I would succeed than someone else. I had my hands up, so.
You were also talking about people shifting within the dating or within the marriage. I think it's a mistake to go into a marriage. Often people like to take on projects, and like, he'll be more this if I have influence on him, or she'll be more like that if I have. People really don't change. They may shift in terms of keeping more of this way or that way, but who they are and how they view the world, you're really not going to change them. So not to expect that and hope for that. You can't dress people in your clothing.
That's a complicated point, which I guess leads us to another point. Obviously, on many levels, people don't change. Obviously, we are who we are, and you're marrying whoever the person is. And yet, there is a range where a person does grow. Look at every student in the Machon. Who over here was wearing a yarmulke 10 years ago? 5 years ago? Keeping Shabbos, Kashrut. I'm saying the Machon is the example of change. And then you have Machon Orad just around the corner. So obviously, men can change and women can change, but you're dating whoever the person is. I think that the question is a gentle one, which each case deserves its own analysis. Let's begin on a different point and evolve to here. Who should a person date? If you're a chozer b'tshuva or a ger, should you prefer a chozer b'tshuva or giyoret? So there are pluses and minuses to either side. You marry a person who comes from a frum family, you end up having a family. You have a backbone. You have backing. It's not only you and her. After she gives birth, you have a place to go to for her to rest. When she needs a break, you have a place to go to for Shabbos. You're going to want to go out, you have a place to send the kids while you go out. It's a tremendous blessing to have in-laws or parents who are observant, who speak the same language as you, who share your aspirations, who you can consult with when you have challenges. So don't underestimate the benefits of dating someone whose parents are observant. There are tremendous benefits. Just think about Pesach, cleaning for Pesach, where you're going to go for Pesach, shopping. The fact that when your kids have a Saba and Safta, you don't have to worry what they're telling them, what they're feeding them, and they're going along a similar course that you are, it's a tremendous blessing. So that shouldn't be underestimated. The fact that your spouse will have perspective on what are the norms within a Jewish family, tremendous benefit. There are many things that you can't learn in a class. You live in a family, you grow up, you understand. This is what normal Jewish life is all about. How many times do I get this question? Rabbi, is it normal within a spat that the husband goes out to sleep on the couch or by his best friend? Answer, no. We expect you both to end up the night in the same bedroom. But how is a guy going to know that if he grew up on TV? I didn't even know to address this in class the first 5 years I was teaching here. Then I started getting emails, and people keep assuming that, just like in the movies, there's a fight, so he goes to sleep on the couch. No, he does not go to sleep on the couch. It is a shared bedroom, and you guys have to be civil enough at least to go to sleep in the same bedroom, and hopefully better than that.
You have to work out the problem before you go to bed?
I didn't say that. That's a class on itself in the Binyan and Bayit series. Even if you didn't work out the problem, you could still share a bed. When two kids fight, you tell one to go to another room, or you tell them, no, you guys are going to go to sleep and you're going to make it work. So you won't pick on one another and you'll continue your conversation tomorrow morning. So there are little things which I wouldn't even know to address in class that you get from just growing up in a normal family. We had a guy who was about to get engaged with a girl, and she called me up and said, he's flying out to Egypt for Pesach. So I said, what? She said, yeah, my family wants to have him over. And he says he could do good business over Pesach. So he's going to take along some matzah and some chrein and some kosher Pesach food. And he's going to be in Egypt for Pesach. And I'm not going to marry a guy like this. I said, you're right. There's nothing I can tell you. Let me talk to him. So I called him up. And he didn't have the perspective that Pesach is supposed to be with family. He said, Rabbi, you know how much money I can make over Pesach? I said, yeah, but life isn't only about money. You'll have to make money other times. Pesach is about family. If you're about to marry this girl, you should be with her. She broke up. She didn't engage. They would have easily gotten engaged that Pesach. That's where they were holding. They never got married. She married someone else. I couldn't fight for the guy. What could I say? She's right. All I could say is he doesn't have that perspective yet. Teach him, he'll know. But he wasn't willing to learn. He still went out to Egypt. And they never got married. She got married. He never got married. He's no longer with us. Yeah, he's no longer with us. He died in Egypt. Sad story. As far as we know, it was a heart attack.
Yeah, but in Egypt, the natural causes are natural causes.
Right, I always wondered about that. I don't know.
Natural causes in Egypt can be a gun to your head.
I don't know. They said he had a heart attack. I don't know. But at any rate, I'm just saying, it is terrible. It's very terrible. But I'm saying the benefits of marrying someone who has perspective, well, that's a big bracha. Forgive me one second. I see. I told you I'm